Tulip Mania, the Dutch Connoisseurs. A number of contemporary writers have preserved the names of some of the wealthy Dutch connoisseurs who collected tulips in the first decades of the 17th century. They included several of the richest and most influential people in Holland, men such as Paulus van Beresteyn of Haarlem. He had once been the regent of a local house and grew tulips within the city walls. And there was Jacques de Guyenne, a wealthy painter from The Hague. De Guyenne was a well-known patrician and an acquaintance of Clusius, who was sufficiently passionate about gardening to complete a volume of flower paintings of 22 pages long that he sold to the Holy Roman Emperor Rudolf II. He was one of the few well-off connoisseurs whose real wealth is known, with at least with some accuracy, since he had his capital formally assessed in 1627, that's 2 years before his death. This audit showed that he was worth no less than 40,000 Dutch guilders. Then we have Guillermo Bertoli van de Haval. Now, actually, he's thoroughly Dutch. His bizarre name comes from the fact he was adopted by a childless uncle from Bologna. He was one of the richest men in all of Amsterdam, with assets worth 400,000 guilders. He was quite possibly the wealthiest private individual ever to participate in the tulip trade. Having built his fortune in trade, he could afford to devote his leisure time to cultivating a celebrated garden in the center of Amsterdam. And although there are few descriptions that survive, it appears that it was laid out in a highly symmetrical and fiercely formal plan, which is not unusual. This time, they're making these formal gardens to show your control over the plants. Now, he followed contemporary fashion of planting flowers that would have been planted. The special plants would have been planted one flower to an entire bed so that it could be admired in splendid isolation. The vast influx of wealth that made a rich man of van de Havel was primarily a consequence of the Dutch revolt. Antwerp in the south, the Spanish Netherlands, was the largest port and the wealthiest town in Europe, based on trade with the Indies. But when the rebels, by the way, they're called by the Spanish sea beggars, seized Flushing, most of Antwerp's commerce was blocked at the mouth of the Scheldt River. Most of the world trade was then diverted to Holland, where Amsterdam became the principal beneficiary. Previously, Amsterdam had made its wealth from fishing, hence its nickname as was built on the backbone of the herring. About the same time, the Dutch broke what had previously been a Spanish monopoly by opening trade links with the East Indies. To the Europeans of the 1600s, the Indies were the source of the almost unimaginable wealth, particularly spices and Chinese porcelain. By 1610, Dutch traders had established outposts on a number of Indonesian islands. And despite the constant threat of Spanish attack, Dutch fleets laden with peppercorns, nutmeg, cinnamon, cloves, sugar, silks, and dyestuffs all sailed regularly to the United Provinces. The merchants of Amsterdam called these new commodities the rich trade. Now, you have to understand a couple of things here. Ultimately, at the height of Dutch trading power, they had over 10,000 ships, the largest navy in the world. They traded everywhere. And although they were Dutch Calvinists, they weren't very pushy on their religion to other groups. If you traded with them, that was fine. It was not unusual for people who did not want to trade with the Spanish because they were Catholics and take a chance on the Catholic influence with the priests that they had on their ships coming in, that they would rather deal with the Dutch, who, if you had the right amount of money, they didn't care. So you might trade with Japan, and they would know all of what was going on in the world through the Dutch trade network. So it is kind of amazing. And let me give you an example on how much money you can make. Now, this is an old example. This is the Magellan Expedition. When Ferdinand Magellan and his five ships and 238 men ultimately went on their round-the-world trip in which Magellan is killed in the Philippines. He's given credit for being the first man to go around the world because he'd been the exact same spot coming the other direction. When that fleet returned, and of that five ships, only one ship made it and 38 men. They carried in their cargo hold approximately 10 tons of silks and spices. Now, that is not 20,000 pounds of silks and spices. That's 10 5-gallon hogsheads of wine containers, chests, if you will, or kegs that were in the cargo hold. Okay. After they paid off the families who hadn't made it and the cost of the ships, if you had invested 1,000 modern American dollars in the expedition, you would have made $99,000 in profit. And that was a three-year voyage. Now, that was when it was first started. Later on, you don't make quite as much. The surplus of wealth that surged on a single voyage to the Indies in the 1600s could yield profits up to 400%. By 1631, 5/6 of Amsterdam's richest 300 citizens, and that would be 250 of them, had a stake in the rich trade. And both the Dutch merchant class and the regents who backed them and invested in their enterprises were enormously better off on the average than their contemporaries in England, France, and the Holy Roman Empire. In the first half of the 1600s, a trader of middle rank might think himself comfortable to have an income of about 1,500 guilders a year, and well off if he had 3,000 guilders a year. Gentlemen, shop owners, clerks, they earned an average between 500 and 1,000 guilders per year. The richest man in Holland was the son of a German immigrant, Jacob Papen, and he had built his fortune on trade with the Indies and with Russia. When he died, in 1624, he was worth 500,000 guilders. Adrian Paul, a regent who became the burgomaster of Amsterdam and eventually became one of the most prominent politicians of the Dutch Republic, was worth 350,000 guilders. And then there were another 10 Amsterdammers who possessed probably 300,000 guilders or more. So Amsterdam had certainly come a long way from being founded on the herring bones. So how do the Dutch display their wealth? You have to remember, the Dutch are God-fearing Dutch Calvinists. And in this society, it frowned upon ostentation in all forms. As a matter of fact, if you were a minister and in your sermon, you made people laugh a little, you could be fined for doing that. So it's going to be interesting how this refined class tries to stay within the Dutch Calvinist religious philosophy and still have some fun with their money. Now, the sources for this is Tulip Mania by Dash, Tulips in the Auto-Turkish Culture and Art by Demoise, Revolt in the Netherlands by Guile, The Book of the Tulip by Hall, The Tulip by Pavord, and Memoirs of Extraordinary Popular Delusions and Madnesses of Crowds by McKay. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us with a donation or maybe a monthly contribution of a dollar or so. So thank you very much.